Okay. A lot of folks today have been talking about, and yesterday, have been talking about what the beef industry is facing. And I think that historically high cattle prices for some parts of the industry are really great. For others, it's not so great. And we see rising input costs, although corn is at a good price and feeds at a good price. We always have volatility. And the consumer concerns about beef safety, carbon footprint, animal welfare, disease, and antibiotic use. I think that we need to do more with less sustainability, and I also think that that's going to require disruptive innovation. Now, some of you may have got a newsletter from me today, and I think that this is really fertile ground for the Internet of Things. And this is something that GrowSafe has been doing since 1990. And we'll talk a little bit about that. Essentially, it's connecting identified things and sensors to the Internet. And that's what we're doing in cattle. And looking at physical sensing, cognitive computing, and analytics. Now, who we are a team of about 12 engineers, computer, and animal scientists. At any point in time, we probably have about 20 people in our operation. And we've developed a big data acquisition platform. And on that platform, we're building applications for the livestock production chain. We've got a system that most people are familiar with, measuring feed intake and seed stock. In the feedlot, we're looking at disease identification and market optimization, and we're really exciting to starting to extend our platform to cow-calf. Now, we're a small operation, but everything that we derive from operations is invested back into research and development. And at this stage, our platform has cost us about $12 million, and it's exponentially increasing. And so Camille keeps complaining, and Camille Huysma, who's our primary inventor, is in the room. He keeps complaining that we're taking the money away from his airplane that he wants to buy. But essentially, we think we get more value out of investing in research. Now, we have a lot of partners, and this is a picture that I cherish very much. Because this year, and I don't know if you can see it, I'm sort of the thorn amongst a bunch of roses there. But this is West Virginia University, and what you may not know is 2015 is our 15th year of measuring intake, and West Virginia University has been measuring intake for 10 years. And that took a lot of commitment. And I'm really proud of this picture because I think every one of my customers are trailblazers. And I've got some of the best customers in the industry, and they're highly committed to collecting good data for the industry at large. What you see with these people are people who have invested 10 years into feed intake testing, producers, there's academic, there's extension, there's even a couple of senators. And I'm very thankful to the late Senator Robert Byrd because he invested $2 million into feed intake testing at West Virginia, and that really got us started. So I think those are pretty special people. Now, we collect a lot of data. And I'll dispute with Megan a little bit because there's a big difference between our system and others. And the reason why there's differences between our systems and others is we're focused on commercial application. It's really nice that universities use our technology, but we want our technology on farm. So that's what we're going to talk about today is commercial phenotyping. Now, our systems collect a lot of data for a number of reasons. One load sensor in our system collects about 88 million samples per day. If you go to Midland Bull Test, Leo McDonald and his family, Stevie and Lindsay have now taken over the bull test. They're a family-run operation. They have 92 of these troughs. So take 88 million data points times 92, and it gives you an idea of the data that we collect. Now, we've created a methodology whereby we are constantly condensing and compressing data. And we have a processor in our system. We don't collect data like everyone else does. We have a multiplexing method whereby we can keep the cost of our technology down rather than having a reader at every station. And through our code, we're constantly processing that data. So the data that we collect raw is processed down, and then when it goes to our data acquisition computer, it gets processed down again, and it goes to our server. We're trying to get to the point where we just provide one simple instruction to the people using our technology. Go look at that animal. We think he's sick. Go replace that part. Now, when we did this, we actually have started winning a few awards in the ICT sector. And that's really nice for a company like ours, because in the beef industry, you don't give us any awards for being a good tech company. So being a good tech company is really important to us. So in Canada in 2013, we won the Canadian Ingenious Award, which is one of our largest high-tech awards. And I got invited to New York. So it's really fun when you're a techie and they invite you to New York and ask you to speak to a whole group of people outside the industry. So you have to explain what our industry does, and you have to explain how it relates to technology. And believe me, there is a gap. But I expressed, and I was so excited, I expressed how much data our systems collect. I said 1,000 head feedlot, and everyone went, oh my goodness, is that ever big? And I thought, gosh, I don't know if I can take it to Simplot Land and Livestock. But a 1,000 head feedlot, I said, collects 69 million data points per day. And it takes us milliseconds to find and read data. Now, how we've done this is we leverage the PC and the time available. So we use a standard PC. We run about 30 different processes and algorithms every night, and our data resides on your on-farm computer. And so these processes every night just chunk away, and then when you get there in the morning, the data is sitting there for you. Now, I was so excited. I said, when we had a Core 2 dual processor over at University of Missouri, it took us 6 hours to process that data. When Intel invented the i5, it only took us an hour and a half. I said, we use processor speed. Now, I was really lucky because in the audience was an Intel representative. And they said, wow, this is so great. You actually use all our processor capability. And we said, yes, we do. And they basically said, this is really the domain of large, big supercomputers and places that have IT, and you're doing this on farm. And so they did a case study on us, and we're really pleased to say that last year, Intel gave us their Small Medium Enterprise Award for innovation. So for us, that was a huge deal. So what does that mean to the beef industry? We get an Intel award. What does that mean? What it means is that we have a very novel phenotyping platform that's collecting lots and lots of data in a commercial fashion. It's novel data that can measure, monitor, and analyze some really complex traits. We've got some complex traits to figure out. Things like efficiency, things like growth, things like stress, adaptability, differences in management, environmental tolerance, and metabolism. So all of a sudden we have a system that's operating on farm that's collecting masses of data that gives you objective and subjective measurements, descriptions of management protocol, all in a standardized format. And I want to talk to you about the power of standardization. So just a little intro, and now let's get into the meat of the technology. So I think you've all seen this technology. Animals are tagged with an RFID tag. RFID antenna is molded directly in the trough rim. The trough is suspended on load cells. We actually sample at 3-gram resolution and write down at 10. The tag in the trough feed disappearance is measured every second. Wireless data transmission transmits data from that little stubby antenna you see on the panel about 60 miles line of sight. That basically means we can transmit data in almost every typical type of ranch situation. We also can repeat that. So very easy process. Software automatically analyzes the data, as I said, and the computer is plugged into the internet. Now, why on earth do we collect so much data? We collect so much data because the cattle industry, and here's something I'll tell you, we know every wire we put up will be taken down, every wire we put underground is going to be dug up, and this is the toughest environment for electronics that there is. We collect data every second because we know what's happening at the feed bunk. We also collect it because we know there's things like birds that come and eat feed that don't have an RFID tag. Raccoons are our nemesis. They eat out of feed bunks continuously. Rain comes into the bunk, so we measure everything that goes in the bunk and everything that goes out of the bunk, and we're constantly analyzing that data. Now, the most fascinating thing about collecting data every second, and this is where we depart from other systems. In Centech, Kalen Gates and others, as Megan explained, takes one RFID tag measurement when an animal comes to the bunk, one when they leave. They need those deflectors because they can't, if you're not measuring the RFID tag every second, you don't know what's happening. So those systems cannot sit outdoors. They can't sit out in the real environment. And that's what we're focused on, is real environment collection. But we're also interested in really novel behavior traits. And the way we collect data, what you're looking at, and you don't have to really focus on the graph too much, but what you're looking at is each different color that you see is a different animal. If I have a cursor, I can figure out what the RFID tag is for that animal. So you see those blue dots of data, that represents 1 second of data. The difference between the one dot and another is a bite size. And what you're looking at is that little yellow animal that's deking in and out of that blue pattern. He's actually just sort of going along with a friend and eating, and could be all sorts of different things. And once we start looking at the different things, we can figure it out. That black line that you see is feed disappearance from the trough. Those black spikes that you see are the pressure or the force that that animal is exerting on the load cell. And what we've learned is that each animal has a digital feeding signature that's almost as unique as a fingerprint. And so we're very excited because there's who feeds beside who, who's dominant, what's the hierarchy, what's that pressure on the load cell mean? Is it aggressive? Is it dominant? It's all sorts of things that we can look at. Just a quick look at behavior. And when we talk about big data, when we see data sets of 100 animals or 500 animals, we're collecting data on thousands of animals in the feedlot. At Simplot Land and Livestock, we collect data on water intake, feed intake, growth, and a number of things, 15,000 animals a year. That's going to give us a lot of power. So what we see here is just a little bit of quick stuff. We've got to get some good researchers looking at our behavior data. About 3,600 animals, 15 million feeding behavior observations. Just some quick stuff for you because we've got lists of it. Animals that grow fast likely do not feed at night. If they do feed at night, they feed quickly. Afternoon feeders, they grow fast and they're efficient. Just a couple of things, but I can tell you that we have a laundry list of things that we have learned about relationships between behavior and feed intake. And we're excited that Texas A&M is looking at some of this data, and we just can't wait until people at Mississippi like Rhonda start looking at this data. I think we're going to come up with some really cool correlations in behavior data. Now, one of the things that we're focused on is ensuring data accuracy. Our servers pull out every 15 minutes to our systems and all around the world. And we have a piece of software called a watchdog software that looks for things happening. Users can't amend the data that's collected by our system. We do have processed data into a database, but we can always recover it. The core data can never be amended by anyone. Unaccounted and accounted feed disappearance audit routines run all the time, so what goes into the bunk must be assessed against what comes out, and any difference, and there's always going to be difference, feed evaporation, water, snow, things like that, all of that gets analyzed within. We compare the weight from each scale and each animal against one another, and we do a statistical process control on any variation. Now, development of standards is something that we had to get to if we were going to have on-farm data collection. So what we've done is we built a series of trial protocols into our software. We collect all trial observations, so anything that a feed yard cowboy sees, he puts into our system and it's databased. We audit all statistics, and we've received industry and scientific consensus on everything we do. If a scientist wishes to use our technology, we'll allow them to walk the code with us so they know that the data that they're getting is very accurate. We have software that audits and verifies data, and all of the software we built meets a quality management system, an ISO 9001:2008. You may think that's a lot of overkill, but if this data becomes the foundation for a conservation or a carbon offset, this means that we've got this data collected in this way already. We're incorporating behavior and diet, breaking down all diet components and putting that into our data. We're collecting environment data. Our systems have some onboard weather information, and we are collaborating with some very high-end database partners like IBM, looking at climate data that we can bring into our systems. So what this means in a very simple way is that every GrowSafe test station collects data in the same way with the same quality. So very quickly, software on the computer automatically calculates individual intake every animal every day. We have automatic software that starts trials, configures, and calibrates, and everything is password protected, and so we know who actually went out there and did the calibration. We have automation that identifies sick cattle. We have automation to manage the number of valid trial days. And we can automatically manage multiple trials. So you can have multiple trials occurring and multiple things occurring, and we manage all of that. We, through managing the multiple trials, you can do as many different things as you wish. So you can be testing heifers, you can be testing bulls. And our troubleshooting is fully automated. We work around the world, so we have very simple things that show us when systems work or when they don't work. Now, one of the things that we had to learn, and forgive the old-fashioned graphics, but I wanted to throw this up so you have an idea of how the data flows. The data flows from the onboard computer that you have at your farm. You own that data, and all the processes will work. You can unplug GrowSafe at any point, and your software still works, and your hardware still works, but you may not get our support. But what we've had to learn is we found that people wouldn't back up their data. We found that people wouldn't analyze their data. So we had to get to this level of support. And our customers have really set the bar for us all along, and we've had to be able to respond with a number of things. We actually have encrypted data flow up and down, so all our data is encrypted. It's backed up to an off-site SSAE-16 certified data center so that it is sitting there and can be dealt with, backed up, easy for us to recover data. Now, we've had to build these kind of processes because we work with some very big companies that invest a lot of money into data, and I think that if any farmer invests or any rancher invests, that's a big investment. So we're trying to preserve that as well. We've also found that the calculation of RFI, if you're looking at RFI or residual average daily gain or anything else, we needed to standardize the process. When we first started out, we matched up every test station we had with a researcher. At one time, we were working with 29 different researchers. And researchers, bless your heart, you all have different ways of doing things. So what we ended up with is we ended up with an RFI value from one site that meant something and an RFI value from another site that meant something else. And so that was a bit problematic. So we built a back-end server analytic tool that really has onboard statistical libraries and a number of other things. And it does contemporary group analysis, and it's a very sophisticated tool. We now have locations. We have 120-plus locations growing monthly that are collecting feed intake data. 60% are on farm. We have sites in 23 U.S. states. We're putting technology in Argentina, Paraguay, and we're working with our friends in Namibia and South Africa to get some technology in there as well. Now, Another little misconception that I want to really get rid of is what the cost of phenotyping truly is. Now, the cost of phenotyping, everything in this industry that costs money is a big cost. And I know what the return on investment is in this industry, but basically, our systems, as I said, in West Virginia have been running for 10 years. Another thing we learned in this industry is nobody can afford to pay for support, and nobody can afford to maintain their systems. And we realized very early on, if we did not take a novel support program where we are the ones that take the onus to make sure that technology is supported and upgraded, if we didn't do this, we would have multiple systems at all sorts of generations of technology. So we've developed a support program there where, in addition to remotely accessing computers, that we also have a hardware program where we continuously upgrade our technology. And we've made investment over the years in about three big investments to change the underlying platform. And that means that every installation we have is at the same generation of technology. Our longest running system has been 13 years. Traditionally, you shouldn't get more than 5 years out of electronics, but when panels are returned to us, we upgrade them, bring them up to speed. And essentially, if we assume that we could take 15 years and we fixed our costs, if we could take 15 years, the cost of phenotyping is approximately $19 an animal if you can test 4 tests per year. If we change these test durations and you can test 5 times per year, it's about $15 per animal. Our typical on-farm system runs 4 tests today. One runs 5. Typically, they're running fall and spring bulls and 2 sets of replacement heifers, or possibly 3. Now, the evolution of our standards has been long, and I won't really go into it, but we've been working with breed associations since 2004 trying to set good standards. Now, beyond data acquisition standards, we also have to move to genomic evaluation and genetic evaluation. And we started looking at calculated and RFI EPD within our breeding test groups. And we used a couple of processes to do that. We went to different genetic groups, and CSU helped us for a while. And, we tried to see if we could get something done, failing breed associations reporting an RFI EPD. Now, what we found when we first started looking at this data is that methods varied widely, and I talked about that. There's differences between the data that's collected by a Kalen Gates Iowa State system, an Incentex system, and our system. The output is not consistent within methods. So test to test, we were finding some differences. And we're very sad to find that we found differences in our own technology. And we found that these RFI calculation methods differed by researchers. And when we started looking at data, we even found one set of animals that had feed to gains of 11 to 1. And we started looking at the core data, and we realized somebody made a mistake between kilograms and pounds conversion. That scared us, because we have all this massive data that was, a bit of a mess. So what we did is we went back and we started curating all the allowed historical data that we could, and we're in the process of doing that today. And we're doing that with a lot of assistance from breed associations, and we're curating now. We should have about 60,000 sire records curated this year, and that's a lot of pedigrees. We're cooperating with several breed associations, and what we've done is we've gone back and we've captured all the core data from our system, and we're reprocessing it. And we're reprocessing it all through a standardized RFI method. And then it's been submitted for a genetic evaluation. This is a huge chore, but well worth it. It will give many breed associations, as long as breeders allow us to share the information, will give many breed associations the kickstart they need and also the starting point for evaluation. Now, our evaluation process, who owns the data? I'm asked that continuously. The breeder or the person who collected the data owns the data. We have contracts that stipulate that, and how we currently do things is we conduct an end-of-test audit, we determine the number of valid days and data statistics, and we calculate an in-test RFI and ranking. Then we automatically exchange the data with Livestock Genetic Services, and I'm really pleased to say that we're working with John Janot. John's one of the first genetic groups. He works with a number of breed associations, and he's one of the first genetic groups to use the single-step method, I believe. And he's been great to work with. He calculated the RFI EPDs for Deseret Ranches and for King Ranch, and that gave us a lot of confidence that he would know how our test stations would like to look at this data. LGS undertakes a genetic evaluation for GrowSafe customers. That's an RFI, a DMI, and an average daily gain EPD. And data is usually returned to our customers within 3 to 5 days from the end of a trial. We're paying for all the cost for this, and this is coming to our customers in the annual support package that they pay. And we think this is going to automate the bridge between the phenotype and the genotype, maybe the link that's been missing. So we're pretty excited about this. Okay, so that's our feed intake business, and I'd like to tell you how we're collecting a little bit of data in other areas. In the feedlot, some of you may have seen this, but we're using it both for feedlot and for RFI testing. It's an in-pen weight and water intake measurement unit, and I was really excited to see Megan's data on water intake. Data is acquired when animals drink. It's non-invasive, and RFID and data from multiple biometric and environmental sensors is collected. It's always connected to GrowSafe. We're measuring a partial body weight, and the reason why we do this is full body weight scales have lots of problems if they're in pen, especially around water. They freeze, they bind with manure and mud, and our conversion from partial to live weight and hot carcass weight is highly accurate. Here's something that we found when we first started measuring is that the measurement that we take on a partial body weight is almost a one-to-one relationship with hot carcass weight. Just something we found out. If we equip the system with a water trough that measures individual water intake, we actually can see how much water intake is being consumed in the feed yard. We have application programming interfaces that pick up data from all the feed yard databases like feed and ration, treatment, and if we've got carcass data, we incorporate it into our algorithms. We report a daily weight and growth for every animal in the feed yard, and we accurately forecast future feed intake and weight. We digitally profile animal health. We can identify sick cattle about 4 days in advance of clinical symptoms from behavior changes and about 24 hours in advance of a temperature change. What we're really focused on is determining the optimal market time when cost of gain begins to exceed the value of gain. Now, what we're really interested in here is how do we start when we've got an optimal marketing time, how do we take that data back to the sire? Because we're seeing some very unique things in the feed yard. More data we collect, the more we learn. Now, we have some practical sides of this data. We have to be able to identify the animal that's ready for market. We do so by a visual identification or a spray mechanism. We have to collect data in real time, analyze it in real time, send a trigger back to the unit. We have to be able to measure wind speed, or we're spraying cattle in the next pen over. And so there was a lot that went into this technology. And when we realized that we could spray paint cattle, we also realized that we had the potential to individually medicate animals in the pen. Think about it. If you have a method to identify cattle, you can actually respond with an individual methodology. How cool would this be? Now, we're working with Kansas State University on looking at some of this data, and we're very excited about this. That's research off in the future, but it's very exciting. So the cost of this technology is currently about $6 to $12 per day. The shoot weight to live body weight, we're very accurate. We collect so much data that's highly accurate. In terms of RFI, one of the things that using these partial body weights does in an RFI equation is it really tells us when we have sires and different data points, collecting one shoot weight in time, that might be a bad day for that animal. And if you take a look at that growth curve that I've got up there, you can see that that nonlinearity that could have been a sickness event, we can't tell you what it is, would have actually have penalized this sire. And if he goes on to be a good sire, that measurement data is corrected through this. What we're really interested in the feedlot is predicting hog carcass weight. And we need to do a bunch of things in predicting hog carcass weight. We need to predict about 4 weeks in advance of its time for market. And that's because if you use a beta agonist or something like that in the feedlot, you have to be able to say when they need to go on this product. And we're pretty accurate in doing that. We've built a pretty sophisticated tool to market cattle. We market cattle based on a profit margin basis. We can dial in, and typically we're adding about 39 pounds on, if you have a control study against what the feedlot's doing, that's worth a lot of money in the feedlot. We're using this data to also start looking at estimating dry matter intake. Using water intake and a number of different things like watering frequency, watering duration, and pen feed supply, we're very accurate in estimating how much an individual is eating in the feedlot. And how we say is basically what you're looking at is data from 839 animals in 15 pens. And in this case, we were 95% of the animals were within 14.6% of the actual dry matter intake of what we had predicted. Some of you last year saw what we're trying to do. We have partnered with the Noble Foundation. You'll start seeing other institutions that will be looking at capturing data on pasture. If you're capturing, if you're measuring in the feedlot, perhaps the most important place we measure is out on pasture. And what we're looking to do is to collect novel data to understand nutrition and efficiency on forage diets, to understand a plant-animal interface and whole system interactions. And we want to provide information for improved decisions. So we're measuring everything from water intake to growth and also to pasture disappearance or to forage disappearance out on pasture. So I've given you a very quick download, and I want to thank you. But I think that as we collect more data, and we do so in a commercial basis, that this Internet of Things that I talked about, it's actually going to reduce the cost of technology to the point where a rancher can be collecting everything that he wants, every sensor, everything that he wants. And really, we're only limited by our imagination. And I think Internet of Things is going to make almost anything we want to do possible. So thank you for allowing me today, and if I could take any questions.
Questions for Al?